Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to your Tuesday, August 8th. I've got the book of Ephesians open today, and boy, do I love this. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2 says, "Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love." All right, that's what we have to keep in mind today and every day as we go out, is be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. That's not always that easy to do. We have a full plate of things to do, and we try to pull up our bootstraps and go get things done, and sometimes we're less patient, less humble, and we don't treat each other with love. I am speaking from my own personal experience, so there you go. All right, here's a story that caught my eye. In Farmingdale, New York, a couple helped a raccoon that had its head stuck in a jar of peanut butter. So this raccoon is wandering around the couple's yard with its head inside a jar of peanut butter, stuck for hours. Here's the good news. How lucky is this raccoon? The couple are both wildlife rehabilitators. I should practice my words before I say them. So they were able to grab the raccoon, put a towel around it, put oil on its neck to twist the jar off, and then the raccoon scampered away unharmed. That's a happy story. I like happy stories. All right, I have Dr. David Stevens coming up next. And boy, oh boy, Christmas in August for me, Bill Arnold. I got a book from him called Servant Leadership, Proverbs for Today's Leaders, which he wrote with Burt Jones. And it is a gorgeous book. And it's a whole book of proverbs and wise sayings. And it doesn't matter what page you open to. It gives you lots of wonderful things. So, for example, I'll just open the book. Here's chapter 14. Not every idea is a strategic idea. It has to move you forward in accomplishing your mission. There's a good one. Create a working environment to stimulate, not frustrate, innovative thinking. So we have all this creativity that you need to cultivate and stimulate and not frustrate. It is a solid book of Proverbs. I am enjoying this so much. I can't wait to get them on the air and start gushing about my gift. This beautiful leather-bound book, and it's got my name on it. I almost started crying. I could not believe it. All right, now I'm getting all choked up, even though that was kind of fake. But I do love the book, and it's got my name on it. So we'll take a little break when we come back. Dr. David Stevens from Christian Medical and Dental Association is on the line. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour as I'm holding Servant Leadership in my hands, Proverbs for Today's Leaders. I'll just open it up and here's another one. It's your actions, not your arguments, that will help you advance to a successful solution. And that's some wisdom coming from a book by Dr. David Stevens and Burt Jones called Servant Leadership, Proverbs for Today's Leaders. David, oh boy, do I love this book.
Well, it was a lot of fun to write, and I'm very big on leadership because leadership's what makes you successful in your home, in your church, in your business, in your work, and to get things accomplished. A number of years ago, CMDA was picked as the best Christian workplace in the United States among all the churches and colleges and Christian colleges. And so I've really focused on trying to make good leadership here a key for us, and then sharing some of these principles with other people to help them as well. You know, and Proverbs are great because they're succinct, they catch your attention, they're easily transferable to other people, and good to use with your kids and stuff. So the first book I wrote was called Leadership Proverbs. This one's Servant Leadership. And we've had many, many people use these for gifts for their kids, gifts for graduation, gifts for their colleagues, and get their name imprinted on them. So it's been this is the second one that's come out, and it's exciting to see the impact it's having.
I couldn't agree more. Proverbs are so weighty. I mean, this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll just open the book again. Wisdom is more than the accumulation of information. It is the capability of making good decisions and judgments based on that knowledge and your experiences. You know, David, I'm curious. Leadership is so important, but where do we learn leadership? And is it something that we can learn in the classroom, or does it come from our home situations, or is it a combination of both?
Well, there's some people that seem to be natural leaders. You know, they were leading in first grade. But most of us learn leadership. And even if you're a natural leader, you can always take it better. It's the type of thing that never finishes. So a lot of it is caught from examples in the home, especially. My dad was a great example of leadership. My mentor when I was a missionary was a wonderful leader. Secondly is learning it and learning principles. And there's a forest of leadership books out there. But how do you get into that? And what we tried to do is walk into that woods, tap the richest trees, take principles and put them in an easily memorable format. And I tell patients and people, I tell patients things too, but the people I say, take two or three of these proverbs a day with a glass of resolve and chew well. And as you kind of meditate on these and start applying them in your life, you'll see a change in your own leadership capability. And that would be good for you and good for everybody around you.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember hearing a story of General Eisenhower in the trenches in the war, asking a soldier, "How are you doing, soldier?" And he said, "I'm a little scared." And Eisenhower said, "Yeah, me too. Let's walk shoulder to shoulder. That way we will be stronger together."
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's
a great example of leadership.
It kind of is, you know, versus just chewing them out for being a coward or something. It's like, anyway, that's. I love your book, and thank you so much for sending me a copy.
It was my joy, and I trust you'll continue to enjoy it as you go through it.
Oh, I have it open every day so far, and I will continue to do that as well. I want to talk a little bit with you this morning about artificial intelligence, but before I do that, I want to just bring to your attention an article I read about the idea that we could be on airplanes pretty soon that are without a pilot, because it might be better to have them just run via computers. And I'm just curious if anyone wants to get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot. However, 2/3 of all mistakes are made by pilots.
Yeah, that's true. And we are getting more and more robotics, and it's getting very very advanced and rapidly expanding, especially in Japan. There's predictions both in the U.S., U.K., and Japan that by 2035, 50% of the workforce will be robotic. Now, we talk about jobs going overseas. This is going to have more impact on jobs in the U.S. and other places in the world than anything else. They now have a robot that can cook pizzas. And I'm talking one that moves around, puts the pizza in the oven, take it out in the oven, cuts it up, and serves it to patients. I mean, to people. I'm focused on patients today.
You are a doctor.
Yeah, that's true. But there's what we call narrow artificial intelligence and strong artificial intelligence. And where you get concerned is not the fact I got a new car a few months ago, and it tells me when I'm getting out of the lane, and it'll put on the brakes if I'm getting too close to something. But strong AI actually goes further in making judgments, having emotions. There's discussions about the ethics of this. They just created Erica in Japan. She has 40 actuators in her face. She can give expressions. She talks to you. They're taught, you know, and the guy that created it says, well, the ultimate goal is for you to fall in love with her. They created her face from 30 beautiful women and took all the measurements. And so this is something that's going to be appealing to everyone. It'll be more acceptable. And then University of Georgia, a student project that just came to the forefront, where a robot is there with you as you're a caregiver to a Parkinson's patient or a patient with Alzheimer's. And they're observing facial expressions and tones and all the rest of it and telling you if you're doing a good job or not, or correcting you if you're using the wrong tone. So you see where this gets much more intrusive and gets into ethical issues. European Parliament is actually talking about giving corporate citizenship to robots, and what rights do robots have, and having a contract that you don't misuse them, and all sorts of things that are coming down that are raising these ethical issues. And like any technology, can be used for good, but also can be used for wrong. What about weaponizing robots? What about people are already saying robots would make better soldiers because you can write algorithms and it's not just on the heat of the moment. They'll make the right decision. So maybe we should just have robotic armies and then people don't get killed. And you see these things not just being talked about, but increasingly being created, and it's really accelerating.
I feel like Rod Serling is going to break into our conversation and say, this is the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and robots do a lot of good things, but like any new technology, we have to have a proper ethical environment for it to be applied in, and it's going to change our lives. It already is. I mean, I've got Alexa sitting by my chair in my den, and I ask what the weather is every morning. That's narrow artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. When you get into this strong AI where there's judgments, they just took the first robot that had a conversation in the space station.
Wow.
And the first time that's happened. I mean, the stuff, a policeman in the Middle East is a robotic policeman directing traffic. And but they're becoming more humanoid, more looking like humans, acting like humans. And that's when you start getting into this, because the impact they could have, especially they're targeted towards young children as companions and the elderly as companions. Now, you can use them good to assist you in taking care of a sick elderly patient or a sick elderly family member. But what if you just say, well, let's let the robot do it. We're not going to bother with grandma. You see how this technology can be applied to be helpful and also applied in the wrong way that's going to be very harmful for people.
Yeah, for sure. Dr. Stevens, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, I want to talk about gene editing. What is it and what does it mean for humanity? It's 16 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning, 18 minutes after the hour, speaking to Dr. David Stevens from Christian Medical and Dental Association. And as always, love having him on the show. Dr. Stevens, let's talk about gene editing. Editing sounds like could be an interesting idea if we can eradicate some disease. Are we trying to create superhumans? What's going on with this?
Yeah, just the announcement a week or so ago, it actually leaked the article, the scientific article hadn't been printed yet, but a scientist at the Oregon Health and Science Center or university who's trained in Russia, his PhD, not a physician, created tens and tens, as they said, of embryos and then edited genes in them. It specifically put these through in vitro fertilization. The sperm that was used had a genetic defect in it, and then edited those genes as the embryo was being created. Let them live for embryos live for 2 or 3 days and then destroyed them. The article's not even being published yet, but NBC and other groups are just gushing over it. This technology is called CRISPR, like crisp with an R on it, and allowed to delete genes in order to eradicate genetic disease, add new genes in order to vastly improve various biological functions, or even genetically modify human embryos in order to create an entirely new class of humans, superhumans. So the goal of this is what they're saying is we're going to try to eliminate genetic diseases like sickle cell. And then, you know, that sounds like a wonderful goal. The problem with this is there's a lot of ethical issues and a tremendous amount of risk. First of all, it's human experimentation. They're creating embryos and destroying them by the National Association of Science has come out and said this is okay to do as long as you destroy the humans. You shouldn't implant until we make sure this is safe. Well, you never know it's going to be safe until you implant, because you don't know what you got until you do that. But we're heading down this road. Of course, you need thousands of women's eggs, and that requires putting young women at risk by giving them hormones, overstimulating their ovaries and collecting the eggs. Once you do this, how do you stop it from being used not to just cure disease, but, as they say, creating superhuman beings? And that's just human nature. Rogue scientists are out. This can be done around the world. The thing about this technology that is so dangerous, it is extremely cheap and available to anyone. The materials for doing it cost $60.
Wow.
The laboratory machinery to do it, essentially what happens with CRISPR is they create a protein, RNA, goes in, and you can design it to go to a specific part of a person's DNA or an embryo's DNA, attach at the place where there's a bad gene, cut it out, and either just put the two ends together or insert other genes. And, okay, so you say, wow, that's pretty powerful technology. James Clapper, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, has included this new technology as one of the six greatest threats of weapons of mass destruction and proliferation. That's this technology that just happened at the University of Oregon, because the possibility to do novel animals, novel crops, all sorts of things, but it's broad distribution, low cost, accelerated pace of development. You could create a virus that would come in and go, a virus goes into the cell and actually attaches the DNA. You put this CRISPR technology in it, could come in and kill people with a virus, create a deadly virus or biological warfare. Create superhuman beings with powers that another country may not have, and a super army. They have now classified this as one of the greatest, along with, you know, biological warfare in Syria and nuclear North Korea, of the six most dangerous things in the world right now. And one of them is CRISPR. And you literally could go out and buy the machinery and do this in your basement. So and then we've crossed an ethical line. We've said we'll never mess with the germline. In other words, we're not going to change the DNA of an embryo, because that's passed on to every generation going down. How do you get permission? What if you make a mistake? What if you – and now all of a sudden the door's open and everybody's gushing that we're going to cure every disease known to man, kind of like what they did with embryonic stem cell research. We're going to just let us do this and we're going to cure all these diseases. Of course, it never happened. Mm-hmm. But the risk of this is much greater than even embryonic stem cell research, because of the potential for creating harmful things.
It's unbelievable. I mean, now it sounds like a good idea to be able to eradicate some horrible disease, but the flip side of this is feels like it's just out of control. I think I saw a dog that had been modified in China, and it was like this dog looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger at his prime. I mean, it was this hideously over musculature dog. And
yeah, they've created a Schwarzenegger mouse. That's what they call it, and it's stronger than any other mouse. Only three publications had done this before. All of them were in China. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's very little ethical control there. But there is no law preventing this in the United States. There's no law regulating. The only law in the books is when Congress attached to a funding bill for HHS, Health and Human Services, and said you cannot use these funds to fund CRISPR experimentation if the embryo is going to be implanted. If you kill the embryo, yeah, Health and Human Services can fund that type of research. So, yeah, I'd love to get rid of sickle cell anemia or some other disease. But this is going to be very challenging technology that's going to have the possibility of impacting every person in the world, depending on what happens. We talk about Ebola and what happened in Liberia. The stuff that can be done with this technology to modify bacteria, viruses, human beings and stuff, it's extremely powerful, extremely cheap, and very available. And the information on how to do this is on the internet.
Wow. David, my natural enthusiasm for your book, Servant Leadership, how can listeners get a look at that online? How should we direct them to do so?
Yeah, go to cmda.org. You can order online or just give us a call at 888-230-2637. If you want it inscribed, we'd be happy to do it. It's embossed into the leather of the book, and it makes a wonderful gift.
Oh, it really is. I love
Yeah, and they're reasonably priced. I think they're $16, $17 for a boxed leather-bound book imprinted with the name. It may be 20 or something like that, but I mean, it's under $20.
Yeah, it is,
to get all that done. So it's a great deal. We have had some of our members buy 20 and say, okay, now I know what to get my colleagues for Christmas.
Right, exactly.
Of the first one.
Yeah. Well, David, thanks so much for being on the show, and I look forward to our next conversation. Have a great day.
God bless.
Thanks. Thank you. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, Dr. Glenn Pickering is going to be in studio. We're going to have a conversation about betrayal. Be ready to call in, 1-877-933-2484. Be back in a minute. And it is 29 minutes until the top of the hour. So glad you're with us today. We're going to take a little break for news. We'll be back with more of the show in just a minute. Hmm. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. You might think talent is what makes someone successful. Author and life coach Valerie Burton says, that's not really the case.
A lot of times we really believe that it's talent that creates success, but truthfully, it is discipline. You can have a little bit of talent. If you have a whole lot of discipline, you will far exceed the person that has a lot of talent but no discipline. It's God's will for us to be disciplined, and don't beat yourself up about it when you're not. Just go back and practice over and over and over again. You know, we live in this society where we get what we want so instantly that oftentimes we don't have grit. We don't persevere in things. We don't do things repetitively so that we get better. We're expecting results too quickly, and that's not godly. And research shows that it doesn't work. And so being able to just practice over time, that sense of discipline can be really powerful. It is one step at a time, and sometimes it's three steps forward and two back, but you got to just keep going forward.
Just keep going forward. If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com. Valerie Burton is the author and speaker, and you can check that out. Go to our search engine, type in Valerie Burton or Training Yourself to Think Differently. That'll get you to the interview. Okay, coming up next in studio, Dr. Glenn Pickering is with us, and we are going to talk about betrayal, and it's going to be an interesting conversation. Stay tuned, and if you want to call with a question, or you've been a person who's been involved in betrayal, and you're trying to figure out how to process it, the best wisdom in the world is right here in studio, 1-877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, and if you get on the air, you will be eligible to win a copy of Max Lucado's new book, Anxious for Nothing. Be back in a minute.
Hey, I've got a question for you. What do you and your teen talk about on a daily basis? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. You probably discuss things like school or sports or homework or chores, and while those aren't bad topics, relationships require going much deeper. Do your conversations sound more like pointless banter than engaging dialogue? Just because you're talking doesn't mean you're relating. Try picking their brain on decisions you're making, and once they start talking about your stuff, try flipping the focus back on them. Mom, Dad, sit back and listen.
Is your teen driving you crazy at home this summer? Discover how all that extra time can be used to benefit both your teen and your family. Download Mark's 6 Ways to Make the Most of Summer with Your Teen at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
We are back 22 minutes until the top of the hour. I have in studio Dr. Glenn Pickering. He's an author, he's a counselor, he's a pastor, he kind of does it all. And I'm always delighted when I get a chance to talk to him. Today we're going to talk about betrayal. And if you have been involved in a relationship that involved betrayal, and you've got a question or a concern or an anxiety or a fear, you can call us, 1-877-933-2484. You can also email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. I'll get your question on the air, and you will be eligible, if you come on air, to be in the drawing for one of Max Lucado's new books called Anxious for Nothing. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. I guess one of the most difficult things we'll ever face is how we respond when we're betrayed.
So, that is very difficult. I think you're really right.
So someone betrays us, they walk out on us, they lie to us, or they even gossip about us, and we feel betrayed.
Right.
How are we going to deal with it? How are we going to process that?
Well, I think there's two things to be aware of. Any time we're in a situation where we feel really, truly betrayed or let down by another person. And I think, how can I say, it gets back to this. There's a grief about that, a loss, that we feel like we've lost some trust in that person or we've lost that relationship maybe or whatever. And so we need to let ourselves grieve that. That's good and that's healthy. We have to be careful, though, about our thinking about that. And here's what I mean. I have a lot of friends who work in the field of trauma recovery. And they tell me very consistently that when a person's gone through a trauma, the trauma itself is bad enough, of course. But what makes it way worse is the way that we think about it. Mm-hmm. So, for example, let's say I'm a kid and I get sexually abused. And I tell my mom and dad, and they're good about it. They're strong. They protect me. They make sure that it never happens again. They take steps they needed to protect me. They let me know it's not my fault, et cetera, et cetera. It's still awful that that trauma happened to me, but at least it will kind of end there. But if instead things get handled differently and I come out of that thinking, I'm a bad kid, I'm dirty, sex is icky, and I come up with those beliefs will mess up my life, for my life.
Mm.
And so anytime we've been betrayed, it's a sort of a small version of a trauma, and we have to do the same thing. We have to let ourselves be sad and deal with that appropriately. But we also have to be really, really careful how we think about that going forward. Does that make sense?
It makes a ton of sense. I think it was Churchill, maybe, that said when he was lied to, he said to the person that lied to him, I'm not so much bothered by the fact you lied to me. What bothers me is that I'll probably never be able to trust you again.
Right. And A, there's truth to that, of course. B, and that kind of gets at the belief, you know, how do I think going forward? My concern is that sometimes we make it even bigger than that. Let's say there's a gal who feels like she's been betrayed by a guy in her life, and she thinks, okay, that was awful. I'm never going to let a man hurt me again. She's not only going to push away the guy that was hurtful to her, she's going to keep her defenses up with every guy she's ever in a relationship with because she, A, quote-unquote, doesn't want to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then, B, she ends up then creating that distance so she doesn't get hurt, except then there's really a built-in limitation then on how good that relationship's ever going to be. You know, Jesus said the goal of marriage is that the two shall become as one. But if one of us is really afraid of getting hurt, so we keep the other one at a distance so we don't get hurt, that whole two becoming one thing never really has a chance to happen. We go through life sort of separate. That's always my concern when somebody goes through a betrayal sort of experience.
Mm-hmm. So the processing of this betrayal is really going to make or break the outcome of, could be the rest of your life.
Yes.
Right. That's pretty scary.
But hey, don't those take it too seriously, right?
Yeah, but those stakes are awfully high, Glenn.
Yeah. And I think it's really true. I think anytime we go through a grieving time or a time when we feel betrayed, we have to be really, really careful what we tell ourselves about that experience.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I want to ask you quickly about the betrayal that Jesus suffered with Judas.
Right.
Obviously, that was something that just came to my mind as I was thinking about having you in studio. And and he was, of course, he betrayed Jesus, but he was also fulfilling prophecy. So, you know, it gets a little tricky there. But Jesus certainly had to deal with betrayal as well.
Oh, for sure. And I think it's interesting how he dealt with it. So, so Peter betrays him by denying him three times, just as he predicted he would. Then afterwards, in John 21, he says, "Do you love me? Yes, I do. Do you love me? Yes, I do. Do you love me? Yes, I do. Feed my sheep, etc." And it's like, so Jesus handles the betrayal by actually pushing that person to decide in a very explicit way that they want to be back in right relationship with him. And it's interesting to me that, so if there's somebody in our life who has hurt us, and they do the right thing, they acknowledge that they've hurt us, they ask our forgiveness, that's great. But then the next question still has to be, and what are we going to do to put ourselves back in right relationship? How are we going to handle this so that we use this as an experience to build a deeper trust instead of using this as an experience that starts a wall that builds between the two of us?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus was very, very clear in his example about really having to reclaim that relationship.
So I know there's probably lots of listeners right now that have been betrayed because someone has maybe even gossiped about you,
right?
And said something that was kind of hurtful, and you felt a little bit attacked, and you're trying to figure out, how do I respond to this person? What do I do? How do I pay back?
Right.
And I have Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio. His website is glennpickering.com. That's glennpickering.com. We're going to open the phone lines if you have questions. 1-877-933-2484. And if you call and get on the air, we're going to put you in the drawing to win one of Max Lucado's books called Anxious for Nothing. We'll take a short break and be back more in just a minute.
And something without one love bears heavy on my mind.
Good morning. 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I have in studio Dr. Glenn Pickering. We're talking about betrayal, which is never an easy subject to talk about. And do you cry out to God or do you seek revenge? What do you do? Hard to say. But we're taking some calls. We've got Chris on the line from Maple Grove. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
You have a question for Dr. Pickering?
Yes. My wife had 4 affairs. I forgave her right away. But then I went into a state where I lost my mind.
Ooh. Very sorry. Very sorry, Chris. I don't know, Glenn.
What does that mean, Chris, that you lost your mind?
I don't know what I was doing.
Right.
Sort of like a nervous breakdown.
Right. I think sometimes when there's an event in our life that's so awful that we can hardly process it mentally or emotionally, that we go into a state of almost like shock, like we almost like disconnect from our own selves just because the pain of dealing with it is so deep. And I think when that happens to us, what that means is we have to sort of deal with that pain one little piece at a time because the whole thing is like too much to deal with at one time. And so we have to find ways to sort of break it down into pieces. And so oftentimes when I'm dealing with somebody who says something like that to me, like, Glenn, I'm in a state of shock, I'm first thing I think, great, what do you need to do to take care of yourself today? What do you need to do to take care of yourself this week? Who can be on your team right now? Who can be a support person for you right now? Who could you call this week and spend some time with? What can we do right now to just help you start one step at a time, kind of dealing with the shock, dealing with the grief, slowly putting your life back together one piece at a time? Because sometimes there are things that happen to us that are so big, we literally can't absorb it all at one time. And we literally have to just deal with it one piece at a time. That's all that we can do.
Chris, thank you so much for calling the program. Glenn, let me ask you this. If you have an episode of betrayal,
right,
and your first thought is, I want to strike out.
Right.
I got to get my revenge. I got to get a piece of flesh here.
Right.
But don't we first really, shouldn't we really first take this cause that we have to the Lord first?
But we do. With a specific mindset, and here's what I mean. I talk with my clients a lot these days about being what I call a second responder, because my first knee-jerk response is almost never the one I actually want to go with. So you're right. When we get hurt, we have a knee-jerk, literally unthinking response where we want to hurt that person back. But in the end, all that means is we have literally become just as bad as that person who we're so mad at that they were so bad. It's like, I mean, we're doing the very same thing then that we're so offended about. It doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to think, okay, what's a different way to respond? And you're right, it's probably going to take some prayer time for me to come up with a second response that's more helpful.
Mm.
But it's probably going to involve one of these three things. Part of my second response is probably going to be to ask myself, what was my part of that? You know, Jesus said, you know, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. So if there's a conflict between me and another person, if I'm going to move past the part of me that wants to strike out, part of that is I just need to let God show me, is there any part of that that was my 50%? What did I contribute to that? What do I need to learn from this?
Mm-hmm.
If this was going to be a transformational event for me, what part of me needs to get transformed?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of lashing out at them, I ask myself a more godly question, which is, what does this teach me about me? And for me, that's almost always a very helpful first step.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of breaking out of that knee-jerk reaction into a better one.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, what about if there's, like, for lack of a better way of putting this, a corporate denial? Let's say, for example, you're involved in a church where the pastor has a moral failing and all of a sudden is removed from the pastor. the head of the church, and all of a sudden the entire church feels completely deflated and betrayed.
Right. I often see that certain denominations have what they call interim pastors who come in and do counseling and comforting with those people, because they're people who are really smart, realize there is going to be some grieving. And before we can even move on and think, okay, where does the church go from here, we're going to have to let ourselves go through that time of grieving first, which is part of what, remember I said, there are three things we can do when we've been hurt instead of lashing out. One, we can ask ourselves, what was my part of that? Second, we can let ourselves be sad, because if we've been hurt, there's a grieving part of that, a loss part of that. And sometimes my getting all wired up and wanting to lash out is just my way of not having to just acknowledge to myself, this is really sad.
Mm.
This hurts.
Mm.
And, you know, when I feel that sad feeling coming up about being betrayed, I can feel myself wanting to lash out just so I don't have to have that feeling, because that feeling feels so vulnerable and so small that we really, really don't like going there. So step two is to say, I need to let God be with me in my grieving about that. And it's just as true on a corporate level. Before we can move on, we have to actually acknowledge the grief, deal with the grief, let ourselves be sad, claim our sadness, and then start to ask ourselves the question, okay, where do we go from here? Which is the third step. So first I want to ask, what's my part of that? Second, I want to make sure I'm letting myself be sad about the part of that that is sad. And then I need to ask myself, okay, now what? Where do I go from here?
Okay. Glenn, let me ask you this. If you've been in a situation where you have felt betrayed and you want to have reconciliation, but the other person maybe isn't willing to want to reconcile, and maybe that relationship is very significant. Maybe it's
right.
A spouse, maybe it's a parent. And gosh, you're estranged and you want to reconcile, but they're not interested.
Oftentimes it's not that they're not interested. It's that they feel so bad about what they've done, that every time they see you, it kind of reminds them that they behaved really badly, and it's like literally painful to be around you. So I can do the first two steps. I can ask myself, what's my part of this? So instead of turning them into a monster in my mind, I think, no, we both had part of that. That makes it easier for them to reconcile with me, because they can see I'm not blaming them and making them the bad one. Secondly, I want to let myself be sad, so I'm not lashing out at them, I'm not being mean to them, I'm just sad. And then third, when I think, okay, now where do I go from here? I can invite them into that process with me about reconciliation. They might decide they want to come and they might not, just like you said. But here's the really great thing. If I let them know I'm not trying to hurt them, I'm not blaming them, I see my part of that, I've been sad, and now I really want us to get a better relationship. Even if they don't necessarily respond well right away, they might very well at some point, because there's a seed there that's been planted, that they now, once they get past maybe some of their own shame and struggle with it, maybe will say yes to that invitation. So it's important to make the invitation, and it's important not to take their first response too seriously, because that's just their knee-jerk response. And it's entirely possible they'll come back later and think, you know, maybe I do want to work on that.
Okay.
And I need to leave that door open.
Yeah. Glenn, a couple of minutes left, and yeah. I don't want to drop this little bomb, but how do I overcome my feelings of rejection? If I've been betrayed, I feel rejected. I feel like something went away that was once so prized and coveted, and now it's been fractured.
Right, and I think that's the sadness part, and I need to let myself acknowledge that's not just a feeling, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That is what happened.
So is it a season of sadness? Well, I mean,
yes,
how much is acceptable before your friends say, God, Glenn, I can't be around you anymore.
Pull yourself out of it, will you?
Yeah,
that's part of what I'm thinking that. See, I want to, remember those are three steps. I want to say, what was my half of that? Because that keeps me from being stuck there. I want to let myself be sad because that keeps me from being stuck there. And then I need to ask myself the question, okay, now what do I want to go from here? Because that keeps me from being stuck there.
Okay.
Each one of those three steps moves me along the process, which is my way to not get stuck.
Yeah, why are people so comfortable being stuck?
You know, because then I never have to do step three.
I knew you'd have some snappy answer.
Where do I go from here? Because, see, if I'm scared, let's say I've been hurt, so now I'm kind of afraid to go back out in the world. It's easier to just keep grieving and being sad and being the victim and telling people how awful my life, because then I never have to go back out on the world. Because if I've gotten thrown off the horse, see, the fact that I eventually have to get back on the horse is a pretty scary thought.
Yeah, because you could go get back on the horse and get thrown again.
I know something.
Who wants to do that?
I could get hurt, which of course I could. I might.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Glenn, such a pleasure to have you in studio. GlennPickering.com, GlennPickering is his website, if you want to go learn more about him and his books and some of his writings. He's a counselor, a teacher, an author, and he's kind of done it all. So love having you in studio.
Thank you.
We'll take a short break and be back to wrap up the show. Thanks so much for listening today. So glad you've been with us. God bless you in your day. And just go out and love one another, forgive one another, as God has instructed us to do so. And I will see you tomorrow. God bless. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.